Are you going to rescue all of the guards? That would be your arc in Star Trek. Like, what is her mission? I'm here to rescue all of the Klingon worms from being eaten. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1680-94.1. Welcome aboard the Starships Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she arrives exactly when she means to. It's Ambassador Danae!
I'm a fucking wizard.
You know you are, and we did that because the last week we had a Lord of the Rings crossover episode with Aaron Hermet. And that was so much fun.
It was so hard to sit on that for months. We had recorded that
five months in advance,
knowing that we were going to have a break coming up. And so I have just been so excited to release it so that you guys got to finally hear it. And if we have any new listeners this week from Lord of the Rings, it's nice to have you on board.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Yes, we have taken a brief break. It's amazing to be back to talk some Star Trek. We have decided to wrap up season one of Lower Decks. So we've already done two episodes, which was the first episode ever, and episode six, which means we have eight episodes to go. Now, I think we said the plan was to also do season two. However, we're not going to be able to squeeze in season two before Lower Decks season five comes out, and we really want to do the last season as it airs and give it a good send-off.
So that's just too much Lower Decks.
Way too much Lower Decks. Come on, nobody wants that. I know you all want that. I want it too. But we're going to complete Lower Decks season one, and then we're going to do a theme. We're not too sure what that theme is going to be to bridge the gap between this coverage of Lower Decks and season five, but it's going to be a theme.
We have had many requests to return to time travel episodes.
Probably the most amount of requests, yeah.
So we might do a fan request. So if you have a request for our theme between this season of Captain's Pod and then the live review of the upcoming season of Lower Decks, you can send them to captainspod@cinemasins.com email.
You sure fucking can. Ambassador, we have done episode one. As a brief reminder before we go into episode two, episode one was the introduction to the Lower Decks crew. Boimler gets suckled on by a spider. Mariner laughs, and Boimler is sent on an undercover mission by Captain Freeman to kind of spy on Mariner and report if she does anything wrong. But he kind of immediately abandons that, comes clean with Mariner, and they're best friends forever.
I remember liking this episode. It's very unique. In the first few minutes, she stabs him with a batliff, which was unexpected.
Yes, right in the leg. It's such a great opening. She's completely drunk.
I think in the past, we've actually recommended watching this series to anybody who's trying to get into Star Trek, who is used to fast-paced storytelling, like Rick and Morty style, where you're just the transition from scene to scene is
zip, zap, doo, bop, bop. Yeah,
it's a fast-paced episode. It's meant to just kind of like take you on a silly journey, and it does, a really good job. But it's based in the Star Trek universe, so there's lots of fun references for the fans. The characters for the Star Wars. Oh my god!
What did you just do?
My brain went totally blank. I reached for a word, and that's the first word that came up. I'm not fully indoctrinated. I'm so sorry.
That hurts. I don't like it.
For the Star Trek fan, Boimler is like the fanboy.
The Star Trek fan.
He's the quintessential fan of everything Star Trek.
Yeah.
For the new viewer, I don't know. I think that we're meant to be on the Mariner side of things, but she also knows her shit really, really well.
Yeah, yeah. But I think she's the closer allegory to somebody that's probably the what you wouldn't expect as a stereotypical Starfleet person. So the stereotype is by the book, down the line, unless you're Captain Kirk, and then you're like a bit of a space cowboy. But Mariner is very much Kirk. She's very much a space cowboy. So she's kind of a link back to the original series, and also not the prim and proper TNG character that we're expecting.
The other thing that I remember that's probably important as we jump back into season one is that Mariner's mother is the captain of the ship.
Yes.
And there are some mommy-daughter issues.
Yeah, there are.
That are more further resolved in other episodes we've seen from later seasons, but we're going back in time, which means that's probably going to be a pretty strong theme.
Yeah.
The other things I remember is that we have a fun group of friends that are all sort of stuck together in this section of the spaceship where they have a really great view, but they...
It's the greatest spot on the ship. It's such a great view. You get to see the nacelles and space and womp, womp, womp.
But they live essentially in a corridor of...
Yes.
They don't even have rooms. They're the grunts of the ship that sort of get stuck with doing maintenance and maybe cleaning out the holodeck and things like that. That it's a glimpse into a part of the crew that isn't doing the fun adventures that we would have seen on TV. So I liked that uniqueness as well. In fact,
yeah.
I don't think, what was the episode where there was the outbreak? Was that this?
That's the episode one with the zombie outbreak with Captain Ransom. So funny.
It's such a fun episode. I highly recommend watching it. Yeah. Because the thing that they did really interestingly is that you instinctively want to go follow the main crew that's on the bridge, but that's not our crew. Our crew is the lower decks crew.
Yeah.
And so they would show them sort of like pan up the ship and you would see like the A team in their action and then, but
actually solving the problem.
Yeah. But the Z team is the one we're focusing on. So you still get a sense of progress of what the ship is doing. But our crew has their own little adventures.
And they do tend to come up with the solution more often than not, even though they're the lower deckers. But that's probably a good place to start for anybody who hasn't watched the show. This isn't following the command crew as we usually do with Star Trek and most TV shows. This is following basically the cleanup crew. They're all ensigns. They're all relatively new other than Mariner. And it's a very young crew that isn't always in the loop with the mission.
I'm excited to get started. You ready?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay, let's head into Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 2, Envoys. And we'll see you in 10 Forward for a full debrief. See you to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, Ambassador. What would you like from the replicator?
Ooh, do I go with a worm basket? Yeah, I'm gonna go with a worm basket today.
A worm basket?
Yeah, the worm basket.
Do you mean the bowl of gah?
Yeah.
It has a name, Danae.
Listen, I am not that cool. I don't know the names. It was a basket of worms. So.
Before you ask for that, do you know that it's best served live?
Well,
like those worms are living.
I did notice the wiggling.
Okay,
Ian.
Good.
I was aware.
I just wouldn't have pinned you down as somebody that likes to eat food while it's still living. But I'm proud of you, honestly.
I didn't say I was going to eat it.
You just want to carry this your pet? Are you going to rescue all of the guys? That would be your arc in Star Trek. Like, what is her mission? I'm here to rescue all of the Klingon worms from being eaten.
Listen, it wasn't just the Klingons eating them, though. There were other people that were in the market eating them and just slowly one at a time, you know?
For Gah. That is one of the few storylines I've never seen. That's beautiful. I love it. Well, I mean, I want one of the fancy new tricorders with the purple stripes down it because, I mean, what else are you going to pick?
That was one thing I forgot about Lower Decks is it often starts with a little vignette type of a thing. And then there's no callback to it at all. There's no other moment where this tricorder appears. And I hope that maybe in the new seasons, it does have that because clearly this thing has potential to create some really great episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that, Ambassador, give us a synopsis.
In today's episode, we are reminded about the differences between Boimler and Mariner. Only because of the time jump. If you listen to episode one and you're jumping to episode two with no reference in between as to how much time has passed since we watched episode one, I have watched many episodes of Lower Decks sprinkled through their seasons, which is the only reason I remember anyone's name.
Good job.
At this moment in time, like if we had just gone from episode one to two, I'd be calling him Boim Boim and her that one girl, I think.
That one girl.
And was it Robot Boy? Pissed everybody off for
a while. Robot Boy and Green Girl as well. Yes. I just have to move on. Just let Danae call them whatever she's going to call them.
That's right. So there's an away mission where the differences between Mariner's style and Boimler's style are very evident. He continues to just showcase that he's a by the book person, but he has this moment when he starts to doubt himself and his knowledge. And we get to see a little bit of Mariner's heart and how she has more dimensions than maybe you would assume. We also have a really fun moment of seeing Rutherford shift jobs, which gives us a really interesting look at all of the different arrays, the different organizations that assist in running the ship. So we get to see him attempt to go into the medical world, into security, into leadership. And that was kind of a fun reminder as the different places that you can end up inside of the ship.
It's kind of a perfect introduction, isn't it? To here's the different divisions within Starfleet. Like, it's still being kind to new viewers, which is really fun.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. I don't really think anything else major happens in this episode. I think you're kind of reminded that these are just fast-paced little miniature adventures that are alarmingly packed with self-references.
Yes. Yeah.
That's maybe my biggest downfall of it is as a person that doesn't understand most of the references.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair.
I feel a little bit like I'm missing something. This is a show that is for the super fan that loves the references that can kind of, but it goes so fast. It'll make a reference and then it'll make another one and another one. So it's
I wonder if that's deliberate because it goes by so fast because it's not hanging a hat on it. It's like, if you get it, this is for the super fans. Go for it. Don't, if you don't understand what was just said, don't worry. Just move on. Find some context.
Yeah.
But it is my biggest like kind of hesitation with recommending Lower Decks to new fans because I don't think this is a show for new fans. I think this is a show for that you're going to get 100% enjoyment out of if you have lived and breathed specifically TNG, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and a little bit of TOS. But it really is for like the 90s generation of Star Trek fans because it is so, there are so many deep cuts. There's stuff that I miss completely as well. So I don't know that it always gets that balance.
I think, I know what you're saying. It's definitely not balanced for a new viewer. Like if you want to watch and you want to really fall in love, I think you start with Strange New Worlds. But
yeah,
I think like this, there is something about this show that is delightful. It's a bit like standing in front of a Star Trek fire hose and then coming out on the other side of it going like, I think I had fun.
Yeah.
I
think you can absolutely still have fun. Yeah.
I have absorbed something. Yeah. But there's like a lot of water that's left over. That's just like, yes. I don't know what that was though.
And I'm just there with buckets, just absorbing all of it. Like, I love it so much. I want to watch it at like 0.75 speed to catch all of the references.
Do you like buffets?
Yes, I do.
I don't. Okay. Yeah. So I feel like this is a buffet type of a show where if you enjoy knowing everything or tasting everything or really making the best of that trip to the buffet, you might be overwhelmed with a show like this because there's so much. But if you can go to a buffet and just take one pass and be happy, then I think this could be a really fun experience. Like, I can go to a buffet and make one pass and never go back because I can't eat that much.
Oh, I totally get it. Yeah, so I totally get it. This might be too much.
This is I can't eat that much, but it makes for an interesting, and that I'm kind of excited to get into it because I feel like throughout this season of Captain's Pod, you're going to have a whole bunch of references to talk about. And so my goal, I think, needs to be to write down shit. It's like, was that something?
Yeah.
Was that something? Because then maybe you can kind of, you can kind of be like, oh, this is why this is interesting. You know what I mean? But we'll see with the notes if I've already got that or not. We'll see.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's one of my critiques of Lower Decks, but I also don't know that it's an entirely fair critique because it does feel like very much a love letter to the fans as well. Which is why it's so interesting to watch it with you, because if you're having a good time with it, then I think it's really succeeding because you're not going to get those super duper deep references. But at the crux of this episode, I love the theme behind this one because it really does have a theme of finding your place and also the advantages and disadvantages of book learning and studying versus real life experience. So Boimler is the one that went through high school, went through college, probably got a master's degree, knows everything factual about the world that he lives in. And Mariner's the one that went straight into the job market, went straight to get some life experience, did 3 years of traveling. And then the pluses and minuses that come with that. I think the episode is probably showing more of the pluses that come with Mariner's real world experiences. But I love that she also throws Boimler a bone at the end as well, just to give him a bit of a win.
Yes, she really does. She shows a part of herself that I really appreciate and I'm working at, which is not giving a fuck about what anyone thinks.
To sit
at the bar and be mocked by every single person and laughed at, knowing that that wasn't the truth. I don't know if I could have done that.
I don't know. I couldn't. I don't want to like slam his smug face into it. Like, I wonder if she was ready for the level of gloating that he does, because he's an absolute dick. At the end of this episode,
he is. He's like a big child. And this is the part of a show that's really interesting, is when it telegraphs what it wants the relationships to be like. We know that they have a truly deep relationship, like a friendship or care for each other, because I do not believe for a second that Mariner would have done that for just anybody.
Yeah. I was still trying to dig into, why is Mariner doing this for Boimler? And I think there's just like this... there's this kindred spirit that she almost has with him of like, oh, you're what I could have been. You're like, you're the path that I could have taken if I was more by the book. And he's also like 90% of the people that she meets as well. Like, I don't think she can blame him for being the way that he is, because that's kind of most of Starfleet. And she's right. They do need the Boimlers. Like, if you had an entire Starfleet filled with Mariners, it would be absolute chaos. And I think she acknowledges that she is the exception and the Boimlers are the ones that kind of keep the ship running.
We are really early in the series, though, and there's some things obviously we know later on, you know, that they get married, that they have children.
Wait,
which is how every story needs to end. Every woman needs to become a mother to complete, you know, themselves.
I'm really glad that they didn't go that route. Spoilers with Boimler and Mariner.
Spoiler!
What? There is a Spoimler. There's no like real romance between them. It's always been very platonic, which I really like. I really like that about them.
Let's get into like what happens in this episode that we really enjoyed. And it kicks off with such a strong hit.
Oh, it's so fun.
Mariner should be in prison, right?
Oh, straight away, yeah.
She is fucking batshit crazy. This woman needs to be observed by a professional for a while. She straight up tackles a sentient being and attempts to imprison it, and through sheer force and fear makes it destroy part of itself to give her a couple of wishes.
Hey, it doesn't have to, and it is quite threatening. It does threaten to kill them if they don't subjugate themselves before it. So I think she's eventually right for the wrong reason. Right. She's right for the wrong reasons, because she tackled it before knowing, but was actually right.
She did. And Tendi was obviously, and most importantly, concerned.
Yeah, understandably.
Are you sure we should be doing this?
And then
it crackles with energy, and Mariner says that she has the right to do what she does. But that's, I don't know, this part of her personnel, I don't mind the chaos, like just running... sort of willy-nilly. The show sets the stage of, is a Mariner aware of what she's doing before she does it, or is she super impulsive? And I think it gets to play with that a lot, because it seems like she is the kind of person who looks at something, assesses what's going on, makes a call of what is going to be the best decision to make, and then runs into it without telling anybody the plan. And that's, I think I remember this sort of being her general character.
Yeah, let's go. We have a plan. It's attack. Let's do it. Let's not talk about it too much.
And then everybody else catches up. But in the case of doing something so extreme as to essentially killing something slowly.
Yep.
But is that a problem, or is it that I enjoyed it? That's the problem.
Yes is the answer to that. I think that's very clearly a yes is the problem.
It's so funny. That moment when he just goes and like poops out the little crystal.
Yeah. And he's just this tiny little thing left. What I love about it, obviously, is that it's such a TNG trope callback. if we don't know like how to end the episode or what the monster of the week is going to be, make it a ball of light. Like there's four or five times where this happens and a ball of light will enter the ship, or the creature that we're talking about will turn into a ball of light and then leave the ship. So it's really, it's Lower Decks saying, I'm here, this is what the show is doing. Like, I was ready for the entire episode to be about the ball of light, because that's what TNG does. But it kind of, this is when it firmly said to me, we're going to be a bit of a reference fest, and then we're gonna move on from it. But you guys know what we're talking about when we do this.
You kind of forget that is what Lower Decks is all about, is those references. It's in the show, it's in the background. Familiar. Yeah, there's so much to kind of dig into. Yeah. Before we move on to anything else, I do want to say I really enjoyed the voice acting of that ball of light.
It's so great.
It was so fun.
Subjugate yourself before me. It was amazing.
Then we transition and they're in the next little room. And this is when Boimler is like bragging about his mission that he gets to work with the General Corrin, the Klingon warrior person.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love immediately is that we get to see the bottom of the shoe has the Delta symbol on it.
The Delta and the line. So I don't know that it's in episode one. I have this vague memory of people going crazy when episode two came out because the boots are great and they deliberately show off the sole of the boot. And I want those boots so much. I think everybody does. What I will say, and I know, nope, save it for the sins, Ian. Save it for the sins. I was going to talk about the noodles on the panel.
Oh, later on.
I can wait.
Yeah, we're not in the sins section. What are you doing?
Nope, stop it, Ian. It's going to keep popping up because it bugs me so much. Quit it. But again, like if with the Mariner, when they're talking about the Klingon ambassador, it's straight into reference fest there as well because she's talking about, maybe it's because all Klingon names sound the same. They all have apostrophes. And it's like, they do. Yes. They do all have apostrophes. And it's just, it's the first time we've kind of seen Star Trek hang a lantern on all of these things and say, yeah, we know, but you also love it.
It's almost like they gave the writers permission to make fun. And
yeah, I'm sure that was the MO is just lovingly rib every cliche that you can think of.
Is this the Klingon warrior that we see later?
No, it's a different one. Okay. It's not the same. I'm pretty sure it's not.
Did not sound familiar to me, but I can't remember the name of the other one that was in the video game.
Yeah, okay. I don't think we see this person again.
Okay.
Oh, no, the one that's in the video game, I think that was Martok.
What was his name?
Yeah, that was General Martok. Yeah. I think he was leading up
the
D&D game.
With the apostrophe.
Yes. I don't know if Martok has an apostrophe. That's a good point. He might be the only one that doesn't.
Then we go into seeing Tendi and Rutherford together. And this is I think if I was to watch this as a brand new person, the perfect episode to exemplify how obsessed Rutherford is with engineering. Because he pops out of this duct that he'd spend a week inside of. And he's so excited about having burned his hand from adjusting these panels and recalibrating everything. And he's so excited. And then Tendi is saying, you said you were going to watch this pulsar thing with me. And he just jumps to, I guess I have to quit my job then, which is insane to me, but whatever, the show's going to do what it's going to do.
But he's in, I don't know if he's in love, but he's definitely a pleaser. Like he's a people pleaser for sure.
Okay.
He wants Tendi to be happy. Like you said, it does serve the function that the episode needs it to, which is showing all of the different divisions. So it's really fun that he obviously goes to engineering and says, I'm going to change what I'm doing. And they're all just like, good for you. You can go and change divisions. Like that really surprised me. I thought the drama was going to be that he pisses off everyone on the ship as he keeps moving around. But everyone's so supportive of him changing fields immediately. I kind of love it.
Yeah, and it's a nice little bookend because he finds out that he's very good at security since he can kind of put himself in autopilot and turn into this warrior person. Yep. And I want to get to those montages. Like we should go through each montage because they're delightful.
They're so fun.
The bookend being that when he leaves security to go back to engineering, the animators telegraph it by like zooming in, darkening the screen, and making the music really terrifying, and then the shift out, like, it's exciting, congratulations, and good for you for pursuing what makes you passionate and happy.
Yeah.
That was a nice, unexpected moment. And then Rutherford goes, "Aw, bears."
Bears.
So aww. Silly.
I love it bears. So much. My favorite montage might be when he's gone into the command division, which is the first division that I think he tries with Commander Ransom, and he goes straight into the simulation. There are so many great one-liners in there. Oh no, not the children.
Oh my God.
All of the children just get jettisoned into space.
One of my questions for you here is that, I mean, are these all based on existing show, like episodes from TNG or something? Because it definitely seemed like it was a self. They do something called, oh, you should have done the Janeway. And then he goes, let's do the Janeway. And they say, are you sure? And immediately children are being jettisoned out of, like, what is that about? That has to be a reference to something.
No, it's not. The Janeway maneuver is a reference, but I don't know that we find out in this episode. It's been a while. I think it comes back later and they actually do tell us what the Janeway maneuver is. But that, as far as I know, like the kids being jettisoned was just, wow, you're so bad at this that the worst possible outcome happened. Like, it was only the children that were jettisoned from the kindergarten. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
And
that,
probably
it escalated.
Yeah.
And Captain Hansen was very excited about that.
Yeah.
But it starts off with 105% casualty rate.
It's so funny. It's like, how did I kill more crew members than they're on board?
It was incredible. I loved it so much. I think the part that I would assume anyone would appreciate as far as humor is concerned is that it starts off in almost both, I think it was in both different scenarios, that the crew is happy and clean, and then within something happens and they're all bloodied. It's just instant.
Oh yeah, it's like goes. That one like kind of bump happens and the helmsperson is just covered in blood. It's amazing.
Yeah.
There's another great reference that Ransom makes where he's talking about command and the joystick of command or something. And
oh, yes.
I was giddy with that because that's a reference to Star Trek Insurrection. We sinned. Like Riker says,
the manual, that pops up.
The manual steering column and the joystick that pops up. And it's just beautiful that Ransom is the one that loves this incredibly dorky,
stupid
thing that doesn't make any sense. But Lower Decks is also just like, we're not giving anything a pass. Like all of the dumb stuff in Star Trek, we're also going to reference that as well. Like we're not going to let you forget that the Enterprise was steered with a Windows 98 joystick steering column that it absolutely should not be.
Amazing.
Just because it's cool. So yeah, I love that so much.
What other ones did they do with Rutherford? We'll just do them out of order. So there was the command one, and then there was medical.
Medical, it's so great. Again, this might be my favorite. I might like the B plot more than I like the A plot. It's just hilarious. He's tasked with looking after this patient and keeping him calm. And he's just like, just think about the pulsing warp core. Like, the warp core is where I got burned. Oh my God, those are dilithium burns. How did you survive? It's so great. His delivery is so like genuine shock. It's like, how are you still alive?
Oh my God.
It kills me. Like that humor, it's so great. It's so, so good.
So I know this is going to go back just like a little bit because I'm going through my notes to try to find these like kind of moments since it's out of order than my notes are. So I just got to the one where it says employee Janeway protocol. So it was not a maneuver. It was a protocol.
Okay,
so
enough.
I don't know what that one is.
I still don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. And then it says, there's a new simulation directly in path of an asteroid. He does the Janeway protocol. And then they go, the kindergarten on deck 8 is and oh no, all of the pre-K, all of the children have been ejected into space. The Captain Hansom says in thousands of simulations that's literally never happened before, and I just hear you giggling in the background.
Yes.
like you sicko.
That's just never happened before. And Rutherford's just like, oh, the kids.
It's like, just traumatized.
TNG isn't gonna do that. Like TNG isn't going, and Lower Decks is where you can get away with it, and also it's a simulation, but this is the first time that we've had an all-out comedy show, and it is a comedy. Like it's so fun. I love this show so much.
It's so crazy too, because we go from what should be a simulation. They shouldn't put anybody that's brand new to command at the helm, but then they don't have a simulation for him going into the medical thing.
Yes,
and no. I think that's meant to be part of like the wacky personality of the doctor.
Like, get on with it.
Yeah. Okay. So your job is to just distract him. And he's like, I'm here to distract you from what's going on over here.
It's only a 14% chance of death. 22%. And the final montage is him attacking the going against the Borg, which was such a treat.
Oh, yes. For security. Like,
for
yes.
episode two to deliver a ton of Borg. And I think I remember the Borg being in the trailer.
But it's the smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. It's perfect.
It's so good.
And I love, like, it has this, it's very clearly an Upgrade reference. So Upgrade is a sci-fi action movie from the 2013, something around there. And I love this movie so much. And basically, the main character can do all of these fighting moves because a program kicks in and takes over. And a lot of the camera angles and a lot of the shots that are used in Upgrade are in this sequence as well. So it has to be an homage to Upgrade. It's such a fun scene to see him just like kicking all of the Borg, and it's okay because it's a holodeck, so you get rid of it. But again, it's the first time that you're seeing animated Borg as well, which is so fun.
It's a fun moment to see Rutherford's character, because you're curious about this robotic part of him.
Yeah.
And clearly his brain kind of just goes into autopilot and his body kicks over. So there's also questions as a new viewer that I would have about his abilities. And then there's this very strange moment where, so then the security officer comes over and he's like, this is amazing. I built the simulation to give people a sense of failure right out of the gate. Great idea. Just break them down.
Yep.
But you succeeded and you were meant for security. In the name of the prophets, you're a natural warrior, I think is what he says. And Rutherford, another clue as to his curious character, says, okie dokie.
Okie dokie.
Just so happy, like completely removed.
Yes. The least warrior thing you could say.
Yeah. So it kind of is fun. It, you know, transitions to where he's taken over and this great speech about how his blood runs yellow and black,
yes,
like, you know, they're their team. And then he just sort of is glancing over to this Jeffries tube, just so in love. And at the end, you know, Tendi's, oh, I'm so glad to be here with you. And she's watching this event on her iPad. I'm sorry, it's not really an iPad. What's it called?
It
a pad.
It's a pad. And a pad, iPads are called iPads because of the pad.
Okay.
Personal watching access on the pad. Delivery device? display personal access device. Display device, something like that,
right?
The AWD.
And he's not even looking, he's looking at the panel like, yeah, this is amazing.
I love that.
So
ending.
what a quirky character we have.
So great.
Just an absolute obsession and love of his work to the point of just cluelessness in a way. But I know people like that. I know people that get into their jobs like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you need all of those people to be good at their jobs at every level. I love how this B plot ties into the A plot. Like, I've been given shit, understandably, in previous episodes of the pod, where I've been frustrated that the B plots have nothing to do with the A plot. And I like there to be a theme that ties them both together. And the theme is finding your place. In a lot of ways, and accepting who you are necessarily, but who you found yourself to be happy with. And Rutherford is happy to be an engineer. Boimler is still trying to work out how he can be happy being who he is.
Yeah.
And Mariner is very much, I gotta find a way to care more, because at the minute I don't care at all.
But also relationally, like Tendi, for example, in this episode decides that she can just watch it from her pad, which was an option all along, I think, that Rutherford missed, because she knows that her friend is obsessed with work. And I think there's balance to be found everywhere. And I don't think that we should ever strive to have full balance in life, because I kind of think that that's an unobtainable goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I like that I'm not getting the impression from this episode that it's saying like, oh, your obsession with work is ruining your friendships, because this episode said your obsession with what you're passionate about yeah. other people can respect that and then change their expectations to spend time with you.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that because I think that oftentimes I've watched it like, oh, you know, if you want to have friendships and you want to have relationships, you have to sacrifice and you can't do these things. And if it would be different, I think if Rutherford, and maybe he does have an unhealthy relationship with his work or his passions, but this episode is more just showing his joy in it. Like he's
found
really
the thing he loves.
He's found the thing that he loves to do. So you would hope then that in a healthy environment of friendship or relationship or whatever, that those around you can recognize that you've discovered a passion and they're not going to demand that you make unnecessary sacrifices for their comforts. Rutherford showed that he was willing to go to extremes to find out if he could
yeah.
get a position that would allow him to spend time for the people that he cares about. And he came to the conclusion he wasn't going to be happy.
Yeah, it's not going to work. And I think Tendi gets a pass because Tendi is brand new to the ship. She has just joined. So you could say that like it's a bit harsh that Tendi allows him to change careers, but Tendi doesn't know Rutherford. Like Tendi doesn't know him yet. So it's like, oh, hey, if you want to change careers, then you go for it. Like, I'm not going to stop you. But in season 5, I think Tendi would be like, you're not going to stop being an engineer. Are you crazy? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So it's a perfect time to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point that there's a development that can happen and we're still at the very beginnings of it.
Yeah.
Thanks to Sci-Fi Brony for pointing out that in episode 1 I was calling him Robotford, which I love.
Robotford.
Let's shift over to Boimler and Mariner since we're talking about them. They have quite the adventure to get to.
This started off, it made me so comfortable because I was a little bit hesitant when I started Lower Decks because Picard is very, very different.
You mean Picard the show?
Picard the show is very, very different. Discovery is very, very different. When we have Boimler jumping on, we get the Klingon in his uniform with a bat lift. Mariner jumps on him. They do the blood wine stuff. I'm just like, oh, this feels so comfortable because I'm seeing Klingon shit happen. And it's just such a big old warm hug to... It's so, so interesting that Mariner... We talk about Boimler being the Star Trek nerd, but Mariner is living it. Like, she is the Star Trek nerd as well. She knows all of these Klingon rituals. She's got a blood pact with this Klingon. She's living the Star Trek life that I want to live as well. So I love the introduction of Corin so much. And just the shenanigans, the adventure that they go on together is so fun.
To have a character like Mariner that is a huge fan and very good at what she does, but actively sabotaging is fascinating.
It really is.
Fun dynamic to write. These are not one-dimensional animated characters. And I think like sometimes on an animated show, you can almost, I don't know. I feel like sometimes I lose something because the expressions are so flat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we've got eyebrows, we've got squinting eyes, we've got a mouth, you know, we've got these ways that we're seeing expression. Mm. But there's a dimension that I think I sort of check off. But when you really stop to think about it, Mariner is a maniac doing yes. things.
She should be in prison.
Right. And her arc, as we see later on, is this struggle with why the self-saboteur.
Yeah.
And you can see it straight away. And I love that they lean really hard into it. So I imagine it would be something like, okay, so Mariner, so Boimler thinks that he's got this great position. He's going to be the person that's taking this Klingon, this important person down to this place for this peace talk. Mariner is going to interrupt that by usurping and coming in and actually taking charge.
Yeah.
And someone's job is to go, okay, that's great, but how can we show that she is a maniac? And they're like, okay, we're going to have her eat noodles on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're going to put her feet up on it and do the most triggering thing possible.
She has to be disrespectful.
Yeah.
And it's meant to evoke something in us where we're not quite sure where she lands on all of this stuff.
Oh, it really is. It's fascinating because it's in my sins, obviously, but the fact that everyone loves the Elkars system and everyone loves the TNG tech and all of the gadgets, we all want to play with it. So to have Mariner spill noodles all over it, it's like taking the Star Trek Trek manual and just shredding it. And we're just like, this mm-hmm. thing that you hold dear, we're literally going to spill noodles and broth all over it, put our feet on it. And that's what Mariner is doing, while also yeah. flexing that she knows more about Trek than we ever will.
Right. And that's the dimension of this character that I imagine every single time the writers get together, they're passionate about an element of this character and they want to make sure that it's showcasing itself. I imagine that Mariner is written by multiple people who all want to say, okay, I want this chaos part of her to be present. Okay, I want this intellectual part of her to be present. Okay, I want this heart part of her to be present. And they're all sort of, you know, around this table going, we got to make sure that Mariner has all these dimensions. It's really fun to watch. And she's a fascinating character, especially in this episode, kind of at the very end, you get to see that heart that she has. But it starts off with her just being an absolute, like, you would think that she'd give Boiler a heads up, but she loves fucking with people. That's another part of her character. Like, if we were going to have like a little bullet point of all the things that Mariner is, like, fucking with people is probably number one. She just loves.
That's what gets her out of bed. 100%. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's go.
What can I do today and not tell yeah. anyone my plan? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So they get on this adventure. And I love that when he shows up, it's another Klingon thing. Because in episode one, she Klingon attacks Boimler and stabs him.
That's perfect.
With, you know, and so here,
yeah,
we get to see her actually jump to it again.
She really has this affinity with the Klingons. And this really is the perfect mission for her. I can see why she jumps on it. Because she knows the person being on Void. She knows it's just a delivery mission. So it's the perfect opportunity to just fuck around. Like, this is a bit of shore leave for her. Because she's like, what's the worst that's going to happen? He turns up to the thing drunk, as a Klingon would. Like, there is no way she can really fuck this mission up.
Have you ever gone on vacation or on an adventure with anybody like Mariner, who sort of has such confidence that they know that things are going to be okay, that you're sort of calmed?
Yes.
And feel a little bit like okay, but then the part of you that's the planner that needs to know what's going on is the Boimler in us, is just like, but how do you know where the next gas station is unless you've planned it, you know?
I lived with that person for 3 years and he drove me crazy at uni. Yes. It's so annoying. How do you know everything's going to turn out okay? Just will.
It just will.
Damn it, Benjamin. I have to plan.
Oh my God.
He steals the shuttle and runs away. And I love it so much. And they just run through this planet and just give us a little tour of some different species.
Yeah, classic Korn.
Yeah.
Did that on Vulcan and on Earth. Just casually yep. not mentioned in any Wanna debrief.
Give us a heads up, boy. Mariner, thank you. But yeah, I love it. It's the perfect way to show us how Boimler's book learning doesn't have the practical applications that he thinks it does. And Mariner's being out in the galaxy kind of comes and saves the day.
Okay, but before we get there, can we talk about the Boimler walk that he does?
Yes, I've got that in my notes as well.
Because they get where they land is in the Klingon district, in an unsecured district, because that's where he wanted to land.
Yeah.
And so Mariner's like, yeah, let's do that. They get out and she's like, we'll just beam back. And Boimler is upset. The ion field has disrupted the communication and transporter. I now understand this reference.
Yay! You understand what fields do.
No, I don't get that reference, Ian. Oh. I get that there's always a reason that comms and transporters don't work. Okay. That's the trope.
Yeah, you get the trope. You get the cliche. Oh, man.
I get the cliche. I get it.
As soon as you hear ion field, that will start popping up more and more. You'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
There has to be something that blocks transporters and communications. Yeah, there has to be.
So then they have to walk. And I don't know how I didn't lose it, but watching the animation of his hips swinging in his, like, power walk was maybe my favorite part of the episode. And he's talking about how Section 31 yes! walks this way to conserve
energy.
It's
amazing. It's no faster, but it's technically conserving energy. What you're going to love is I don't think you'll remember this, but in Strange New Worlds, in the live action crossover, he does that walk.
In the episode where he does the Riker maneuver that was unplanned.
Yep.
Oh,
but
okay,
I think
okay.
this was Jack Quaid.
Oh my God, so that's so
it's
funny.
It's through the hallways of the Enterprise, like he's in a hurry to get somewhere. And we just see him in reverse do his little Boimler shuffle. And he was just like, he didn't think they would let him actually do that stupid walk, but he does.
Oh, it's my God. So that's great. So funny.
So when we eventually rewatch that episode, you'll be giddy.
I think we did talk about it, but I didn't have a point of reference.
No.
Because I don't remember seeing it until now. And I'm glad that this was my first time because it's so animated.
It's so great.
His hips are swinging.
Yeah.
And he's got his arms kind of tucked up. He is mall walking and it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love
it. Here's one of the first times, though, that I wrote something down that I was like, okay, what is this? It's a reference. Mm. Because he says, I think we're violating the Kitimer Accords. Yeah,
so
what's that?
The Kitimer Accords are basically the thing that stopped humans and Klingons fighting. It's basically like, here's an official end to hostilities, and it gets referred back to so many times in Star Trek TNG, just all over the place. So yeah, it's basically keeping a level of galactic peace. So it's like saying the Geneva Convention, or like something really important like that. Like if you break that, you're in trouble.
Well, I also don't understand how walking like that does conserve energy, but maybe that'll
that's
be
because you're not
later.
You're not part of Section 31, Danae.
Okay, that's true.
I really hope there's a Section 31 movie coming out, and I really hope somebody walks around like that. I would love it. Just someone in the background.
Anyone who cosplays as Boimler has to just be walking like that through the convention halls, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In this section, also, there is a walk kind of through the market, and this is when they drop multiple things. It's like the Kalans that are isolationists, and then there's Taxors, and then there's a couple other things that they mention. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I don't know what any of these things are, but I'm sure someone's like, oh, I know that. So,
some of them I don't. And some of them I'm pretty sure are made up for this episode. Or they're just like, there's so much that I'm going to miss as well. If they're just mentioned in one episode of TNG, of TOS, or one episode of Enterprise, I'm going to miss it as well, because I haven't seen those episodes over and over and over again. But this is what I love as well, is those deep, deep, deep cuts.
Is the creature that implants eggs in throats?
So that's the
a new
first,
one to us?
I think that's a new one. It's the first that I recognize it. Jamaharon is not.
What is a Jamaharon?
Jamaharon is sexy time.
Between who?
Anybody.
Oh, so it's like a descriptive. Is it a specific sexy time act?
Yeah,
or is it just like a general kind of like umbrella?
Do you remember when? So we watched The Captain's Holiday, and this is when Picard is tricked into going to Riker, and Riker gives him the Horgon.
Oh, that book thingy.
No, the statue while he's reading the
statue.
Yeah,
that's essentially like when you go to a restaurant. Have you ever been to the Forrest Gump restaurant?
No,
the Bubba Gump shrimp. There's a Bubba Gump shrimp restaurant, and it's Forrest Gump themed.
Yeah.
And on your table is a little thing, and it has a green and a red paddle, and on it it says, go Forrest go and stop Forrest stop. If you don't need your waiter, you have the go Forrest go on, but if you need your waiter to stop, you put the red one up.
Basically, because the lady comes up to Picard and is like, you are seeking Jamaharon? And he's just like, what?
Okay.
And then she eyeballs the Horgon, and yeah, it's basically you're down to doodah is the insinuation. So it's hilarious that she's shouting out, this person wants Jamaharon. I know his dirty mind. Basically, this kid wants to fuck.
I love that Mariner sprays him with her with the hose.
Oh, it's
That's
so great.
Autobog or something like that. Yeah, I wrote down the word autobog.
I never heard of a... yeah,
it was pretty cool looking, though.
It's really, really cool. The sudden, like, face things. And that was the giveaway for me, that I don't think we've seen this person before, because that kind of sudden reveal of a facial thing would be very hard to do in TNG times and TOS times. Usually, the alien that you see is the alien that you get, and then some transformation with flashing lights will happen. There's not usually a kind of human face, and then face tentacles, not tentacles, whatever that face shield thing was, whatever it was that came out. But yeah, I love it so much. I'll be ready to stand corrected if anybody emails me if they were in one episode of Enterprise or something.
Then please, we go to Andorians, which I do know about.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, the Andorians with the little antennas. Although you haven't seen much of them. I think they've just popped up. Where would you have seen them? Maybe they've popped up in an episode of TOS we did, but I don't think
Strange
so.
Strange New Worlds?
Oh, yeah. Well, to be wow. fair. Yeah, but Hema isn't an Andorian.
He's not Andorian?
He's not Andorian. No, oh, he's okay. he's an Enar. Yeah, he is from the same planet as the Andorians, though.
I've seen an Andorian.
Well, they look exactly the same.
I've seen an Andorian somewhere, and I don't know where I would have seen it first. Anyway, I recognize the Andorian.
Yeah, they're one of like the OG Star Trek aliens as well, because they pop up in TOS, and they are a founding member of the Federation. They're in Enterprise a lot as well, but you haven't seen Enterprise yet.
Didn't we? What was it in Discovery?
Was there
an Andorian in Discovery? Because I have a very...
There is an Andorian in Discovery, but I don't think they're in an episode that you've seen.
Okay. It was at this point, though, that Boimler really fucks up by just shooting somebody without having any idea what's going on. And
yeah,
this is
goodness.
Where I'm glad that he got in trouble, because that was dumb.
Yeah. That's heavily in my sins. That's the most out of character thing that I think I've ever seen Boimler do. It doesn't make sense. Like, go in there diplomacy first. You don't go in there phasers blaring next door to a peace conference. Like, I don't know on what planet Boimler thought that was the right course of action. That was very much the episode wanting some action and wanting some fight to happen. So it's probably the only bit that really stands out to me as weird.
Is it plausible that Boimler was having such low sense of self because he had been messing everything up so badly that he just leapt to the wrong conclusion?
I mean, it's possible.
He needed to be like the hero.
He's very gun shy, so it seems weird to literally go in a bunch of civilians shooting your phaser off where you don't really have the authority to. So, yeah.
And then of course Mariner has to save the day again by buying 5 rounds from stolen stolen stuff.
Yeah, she stole the money.
She stole the money from the Taxor.
That kind of brings us to the conclusion that this is probably one of my favorite parts of the episode, other than the humor of Rutherford, is the fact that you get the stereotypical TNG Ferengi that is all human.
Human,
your guy will take your things. A representation of Ferengis that the actor that plays Quark, Armin Shimerman, has apologized for, because he was one of the very first Ferengis on screen. Before he played Quark, he played a different Ferengi in TNG, and all of them were like hunched over gnomes that were like, human, you will listen to us. And Quark in Deep Space Nine really elevated the Ferengi and gave us so much more depth to them, even though he's the one that started this Ferengi stereotype. So it's so fun that the Ferengi in this episode is your typical Ferengi, but ends up being a monocle-wearing family man that's planning a vacation. It's so perfect. It's so much
I
depth.
Did like that.
I really like that.
I don't know when Mariner made that call, but there's
a
scene that's in the alleyway just after the bar fight where we've seen him be broken, pierced, cut, and he's out there with his pants down, which was really interesting. Did you notice that his pants were down? Cracked me up. I thought maybe he was pooping in that barrel.
Tending to his wounds.
And she takes the random leaf, and the show continues to tell us that Mariner knows what she's doing.
Yes.
She's able to look around and go, oh, that's this plant and this plant. When you do this with it, does this thing. And this species does this when it does this thing. And here's the science for this. And this is how I know these things. She's brilliant. This is a person that's very bored and is making drama to have something going on in her brilliant playground.
Yes.
Where we are all in Mariner's playground.
And she's so confident she can fix it as well.
And poor Boimler is trying to figure out who he is in this playground. And in this moment, he's like saying, I should study bugs and then get it eaten and then make a distress call. And then they show up, but I'm already dead. And what they figure out is based on my final shaky cam video log.
Yeah.
Is that a reference to something?
That is an amalgamation of every different Star Trek episode you can think of. There's always, they turn up at some abandoned science outpost. Everyone's dead or missing. They download the logs. There's lots of disruption. And then they find out the mystery. And it's always something weird. So it's a combination of lots of different episodes that he's just like, I should be the instigating factor in an episode. I shouldn't be the person on the Enterprise solving the mystery. I'm the thing that bad thing happened. I'm the person that bad things happen to. And I'm like the side character that you never get to see other than in a shaky log. So
that's what he's saying.
It's so clever because he's demoting himself to side character of a bottle episode rather than the main character on the crew. It's so clever.
Is what triggers Mariner. She's like, don't say that about your, like, she's,
yes,
we're not going to end up on some mining asteroid. Or no, I think the offense was that he was going to become like a botanist or something. I don't know.
On a research asteroid.
Yes, a research asteroid.
Yeah.
And this really triggers her and I'm sure gives her the idea to message her buddy and kind of kick off the Ferengi situation.
It's such a well-crafted episode. I love it. I really do. It's so good.
It really is. And I think I had this thought in this moment as well that the voice actors, I really enjoy listening to how they deliver their lines. And Mariner is just chock full of character.
Yeah.
So this animation does not work if you don't have somebody delivering the lines the way that they're delivering their lines.
You really do need that pace. Something that stands out to me from the crossover is when Mariner is like, why is everyone talking so slowly? Like, it's just that acknowledgement that animation is so different. Like, it's so fast and loud. It's so amazing to acknowledge that.
So we might think for a split second that Mariner didn't know what a Ferengi was, but that didn't run off for me. There's an episode in the future where we get to see this Ferengi character, and I've seen that episode.
I wondered if you'd remember him. Yeah.
Yes, I did. And I thought, this is an interesting setup. Mm-hmm. Because I was in on the joke, though, I appreciated the moment in the shuttle when they're heading back where Boimler is like, this is a shuttle of silence. Like, yes. I'm not going to share your secret. And then a hard shift to him telling the story at the bar.
That's so fun. What a dick. Well, I think we've just about covered everything. I love this episode. What would be your pips out of 4, Commander? I just made you a commander. That was weird.
Hell yeah!
Ambassador. Number 1.
I mean, just because there's a Blast Shield song, it's going to get 4 for me.
Blast Shield, it's a Blast Shield.
Here's why I'm going to give it 4. I think that in context of this being the second episode in the first season, this is a really strong hit.
Yeah.
We got to see a adventure that had an away mission that goes wrong, that had a battle. There's just a clever kind of work through there. There's the twist of the Ferengi not being, you know, the dumb human hating creature. Mm-hmm. But then also on the ship, we got to see a lot of the ship and the crew with Rutherford realizing who he is. So
yeah.
I think this is a solid episode to really set somebody up to feel like they're confident going into episode 3 for the rest of the season. So I really feel strongly. I like this one a lot.
Completely agree. This is probably the most well-crafted episode of the entire show. Episode 1 very much introduces you to the characters. This episode introduces you to what Lower Decks is going to be. This is what the show is going to be moving forward. I think it's so smart. I think it ticks those boxes. I was so comfortable after this episode, because after episode 1, I was still like, okay, I'm not too sure what we're going for here. How are we going to be the Lower Deckers? This one was like, oh, I know what we're doing here. And I was just on board throughout the rest of season 1. It's so much fun. I kind of wish we would do more of this. And season 3 and season 4, where we have more of an on-running arc as such, that I want more of this for season 5. I want more of this, like, really punchy standalone stuff. But yeah, it's 4 pips from me. I don't know what else this episode could have done as the second episode of a new season. It's amazing. And I remember at the time thinking, like, when I was talking with people in the Star Trek Twitterverse at the time, we were all saying, like, this is probably the strongest first season of any Star Trek show ever. Now, this was before Strange New Worlds had come out, but I think this is as strong or stronger than Strange New Worlds. Like, as a debut season, like, and we're going to get through it and we'll ask this question continuously, but this first season is so, so strong. It's so fun.
I think one of the things I always feel, the pacing, like we talk about, is a faster pacing, but I love it because it's trusting that the audience can handle the blast.
Yes.
You know, understanding. A lot of trust. We're going to put a lot in here. We're going to pack it in here and we're going to see what hits. I don't know if the pacing shifts too much as it goes on, because I remember feeling this way when we were like watching different peppered episodes throughout the next few seasons. But yeah, It's good stuff.
A lot of fun.
They trust their audience, and that always feels really good. I like being trusted to absorb what I'm meant to absorb.
Yeah.
You can always shut your brain off and just watch it. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of an episode on most shows, they usually tell you exactly what you're supposed to know.
Yeah.
And if you missed it, they're going to do it on the recap before the next episode. So you can shut your brain off. But this one has fun jokes, quick hits, a lot of information. So if you're engaged, you're getting a lot from it.
And we're talking mainly about like the verbal references. There are so many visual references, just props in the background. Like, I love going through this again because I'm always looking in the background now for some random artifact or just some notepad in the background or something. I'm like, that's from this episode that I never thought they can I would see it again. Yeah, just draw it and put it in the background. It's amazing.
Super fun.
Having said that, we know there are sins, so let's head over to engineering to get some dilithium burns.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm! Red alarm!
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. You go first, Ambassador.
Okay, so the ball can go through the walls of the ship, but it can't go through the walls of the container?
It's a special container that's designed to contain energy beings. Yes.
That's not true, because they were just all on that little cart. They weren't designed for that being.
I think this one was.
All right, well, if we're doing that with all the sins, prepare yourself for my bullshit explanations when you do yours.
No, you're right. It is insanely convenient that they have the right container for to be able to contain the non-corporeal transdimensional spirit being thing. My first sin was that it should not be this easy to change divisions. You, especially medical, and we kind of mentioned it, but it should not be that easy just to jump into medical and start doing things. It would be chaos if everybody could suddenly shift departments, because then you could lose your most skilled people, and everyone should be a little bit more perturbed that Rutherford is changing.
Here's a sin from the chat from Pinging that says, nope, pining. There's no extra G in there.
Pinning? Pinning.
Sin for fan, throwaway gag, Captain Freeman wondering if she needs a cool way of going to warp. Quote, it's warp time.
It's warp time.
I forgot about that.
I know. Oh, that was so... Again, it's such a like cliche because like everyone needs one. Everyone has to have their own thing. And I don't know that Freeman gets one. I can't remember if she actually, I don't think she gets
That's
one.
That's funny.
Warping time.
What's your next one?
My next one is there's another tropey cliche thing. The chief engineer Billups is gushing about how amazing Rutherford is. And it's the cliche that a character will gush and say how amazing someone is as if they know the character is about to say, I'm going to disappoint you by not being with you anymore. And it just kind of amps up that tension.
Boimler calls the Batliff a sword. That's got to be a sin, right? Like, he would know.
Yeah, Boimler, I'm just going to hold your sword now. He would. He does know that's a Batliff.
And even if he gives it wrong and calls it something wrong like I do, at least I'd try. Even if there's no way that Mariner or the Klingon would not have been offended by that.
Yeah, I think, and Wandering makes a good point in the chat, Batliffs are a type of sword.
What?
Yeah, they are, because...
There's got to be a better way to call that.
He rightly brings up the Sword of Kaelis, which is an ancient Batleth. So I think it is
like a saber is a sword, says Flyboy. Y'all are crazy. Those are special. They're special devices.
Why do they have different names if they're all swords, people? Right? Speaking of specially named swords, I can't believe that the Daktag, which is the Klingon dagger, is able to just pierce that console so easily, and if it does, I'm amazed it still works. But I really wanted to say that
was a lot. Okay, Phil says that Worf at one point said swords are fun. Okay, fine.
I think that's in Picard. I think he says
Sean says Batleth literally translates to sword of honor. The leth part means sword.
As in Mekleth.
Wow.
And Kerleth?
Okay.
I think Kerleth.
This is why we're really glad that I'm not writing these actual sins for our episodes.
Yes. Although I think I would have caught you.
The fans would go nuts.
Yeah.
I still thought it was sinful. Thank you, everyone, for undoing my sin.
It's a bit patronizing, because he does belittle it. He's just like, oh, great, now I get to hold your sword. So I think that's the spirit of the sin.
You should be honored to hold that sword,
right?
Sir.
He should be honored. That's the sin.
The next one that I have is when Boimler says, "Where did you get the flagons?" Don't they have replicators on the shuttle?
Yes. Okay. They do.
Okay.
Now, maybe this is a very basic shuttle that doesn't have a replicator, but every shuttle that I've seen has a replicator. Now, it's always this offline as soon as they need it. Yeah.
It has those blast shields.
It has blast shields, but
it's going to have blast shields.
Mm-hmm. My sin is also, how are blast shields going to help you when the only thing that happens to shuttles is that they crash land on planets? Like, then they are rarely actually under attack. What they need is, like, inflatable bubbles around them that stop them from, like, crash landing.
Here's one from Sci-Fi Brony at the top of the show that I pinned for later. Can't Mariner just get a tricorder from the replicator? But I think it... Yeah, no, you're right.
No, I don't think so. I think there is a limit to what replicators can create. Like, that's
can a
very...
Can it replicate a power cell?
You need, like, an industrial replicator to do that kind of stuff. And they are things that exist. So when they're building colonies, they have these industrial replicators that are capable of, like, replicating bigger things. But I don't know about the complexities of a tricorder. Like, I think that has to be manufactured.
Plus, even if they could, then we wouldn't need to see Mariner being such a bit to it.
It's true. That's true. The other thing is, like, if you can replicate power cells, there's an energy crisis solving thing there. Like, the power that it takes to create a power cell, if that must be more energy than it takes to make the power cell, or else you've got this infinite energy loop creating. So I don't think you can make more batteries. It's like you can't charge a battery by using more batteries. You can, you just won't get anything out of it. Planet is conveniently covered by an ion field that blocks communications. We did that. Corin, this was a really confusing one for me. The bar person that is telling Boimler and Mariner where Corin has gone said that Corin went to the Andorian district to find stronger ale. Are we saying that the Andorians have stronger ale than the Klingons? Because I don't think the Klingons would let that fly. Klingon ale has got to be the strongest ale, right? I can't imagine he leaves, like... He leaves the Klingon district saying, "This ale is pathetic. I'm going to the Andorians for better ale." Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You would, even if it was true, a Klingon wouldn't admit it. It bugged me that when Mariner was fixing Boimler's leg with the plant, he rubs it in and the juices and the leaf just disappear. It just goes. It's just lazy animation.
Well, it heals his leg.
Yeah, but it just disappears. Like, is that part of it? That felt weird to me.
We don't. Yeah, that's true. Sin from Flyboy also was Boimler saying we're the same age. The Sin was, are you sure about that? We learn later Mariner has been promoted and demoted multiple times. The writers may still be fleshing things out.
Yeah, that's a tricky one for me to reconcile as well, because it means if it has been many years, that means Boimler has been stuck as an ensign for a long, long time. So either Mariner is progressing really fast or Boimler is going really, really slow. So there's something... In order to pack in this much backstory, Mariner kind of does need to be older than everyone else. But maybe she's hiding that. Maybe she's hiding that fact.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure why Boimler buys that Mariner doesn't know that Ferengi is a Ferengi. Yeah. I like, really?
He's so low, he can't see straight. He's shooting people and he's believing really, really,
really
questionable
dumb
things.
Like, I think she overplays the dumbness so much. Like, there's no way that that's a Bolian. Bolians are blue. Come on. My last sin, I've just got to say it, is that it hurts to see all of the noodles on the panel.
We already talked about that. Multiple times
but it,
now.
It hurts. Okay. It's pressing all of the buttons, surely. Surely that liquid and the broth is pressing buttons that shouldn't be pressed. And how many noodles does she need to have? She has, I think, three cups. Like, three cups of noodles that are just strewn about the place, and I don't know why she needs that many noodles and why she spilled them all. Three cups
in
a bowl.
Because she's actively trying to disrespect her space. She's throwing a temper tantrum.
I don't like it, Danae.
And also in the past, when I've brought up any kind of thing on a panel, I've been told that there's like technology has advanced
to allow for spills.
Exactly. This is what I've been told. It's actually happening in the chat right now, you're being told.
Surely in the 21st century, they figured out how to ramen-proof their controls. Yes, I suppose they probably have.
It's still disrespectful.
It's still disrespectful. There's probably like a lock keyboard setting where everything is locked while I spill my noodles everywhere. But
there's a Mariner setting. someone can just press a button and then just everything is
everything gets locked down, probably just out of her reach. Well, that was a lot of fun. How did it feel to dive back into Lower Decks?
It's a great way to get started back on Captain's Pod. So I loved it. I
loved it so much. Well, next week we're going to continue. We'll be doing episode 3, which is Temporal Edicts. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. If you have any emails, questions, or anything you want to share with the show, contact us, captainspod@cinemasins.com, and join us on the lovely CinemaSins Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins. where we have a lovely Captain's Pod channel talking about all things Star Trek, including spoilers about all of the new Star Trek that's coming up. There's going to be Strange New World Season 3, Lower Decks Season 5, Section 31. There's a Star Trek Academy TV show coming. There's also a sitcom Star Trek TV show coming that's going to be the first live-action comedy Star Trek show. And I have no idea what's happening with that, but it sounds
everybody's on drugs.
Amazing. Everyone in the Star Trek universe is on drugs, and I'm here for it.
Because there's no way that there's an element of Starfleet that's not super fucking serious.
Apparently,
so it's
we're gotta
not
find
be
it.
Starfleet.
I think it's gonna be Starfleet adjacent. I think it's gonna be I don't know, but I'm here for it. Like,
it's like the college days. No, that's
gonna be
Academy.
The Starfleet, the Academy show, yeah. I'm ready to bend genres. Let's do it. It's amazing.
Mm.
Until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and I'm going to go violate the Kitima records.
And I'm asking you to supplicate yourself. I'm going to ask you to supplicate. Let me do it with this.
Supplicate yourself.
Oh, nice. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
We should have some background music while we do our show. No.
Oh, I think you're in control of that, right?
Yeah,
can't you do that?
But then it's like baked into the audio later. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good point. That might be a... I mean, are you recording from your board or in Audition?
I'm using Audition because I don't have a way to do it my board just yet. Hi, everybody.
Got it.
Welcome to the show where we
immediately start talking about
technical issues.
Yep.
So today, Iris and I were talking about, like, she was talking about saving money for stupid shit. Well, okay, for her, it's big.
Iris, if you're listening to this in the future.
You want to buy another fucking stuffed animal, even though you have 50,000 of them already, and you really only want it to hold it and say this is a new thing, and then you forget about it and don't care about it at all. That's why I'm calling it a stupid thing.
And she knows that as well. Like, she's been able to articulate, this is a dumb thing that I want. I just want the newness. I don't care what it is.
Yeah. But we're talking about, like, selling things and, like, having ideas for how to make money. And so... we have an idea that's been percolating in the background for a long time, which is me doing my own podcast. And so a couple of nights ago, Iris and I were just having this conversation, and I can't remember how it got started, but I said something like, this would make a great show. And she got so excited and started coming up with, like, podcasts. She's like, we could do our own podcast. And I was like, well, yeah, we can do our own podcast. And so she just, like, took it. She started sharing ideas. She started sharing, like, we could talk about something and then have it to sell and then take that money and save it so that we can do things we want to do.
Welcome to radio.
And I said, that's been my life,
that's
baby.
It.
Today, she's like, remember, mom, like, we're not going to have money problems because we're going to do that podcast. So now it's about managing
problem
her
over.
Expectations.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Baby
that's
girl.
The real rest of your life.
Like, yes. What do you think we're going to be able to do? Because I wrongly assumed that just her potentially having a show and maybe having a Patreon supporter or two would be fine. But I'm realizing that she's got some genuine expectations of being able to just make bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm trying to kind of prepare her for that reality.
I mean, Bluey is making so much money. All of the My Little Ponies are just rolling in it. She wants a piece of that action.
Why can't she too? She was talking about buying a stuffy, and I said, you know, if I was going to save money, I think what I would do is, like, do another trip. Like, we could go see Niagara Falls or, like, the Redwood Forest. And she's like, yeah, let's go to the Amazon. God damn it. That is, I'm trying to, in the US, let's try not to try.
Yeah, but you said Niagara Falls. That's not in the US. It's in Canada, right?
It's right on. It's Canada and New York, or New York State. There are hotels that are on both sides.
That's amazing. I believe you. I just, for some reason, I always associate Niagara Falls with Canada.
Well, I think technically that's the better view, to be clear. The only can I tell you the only reason I know that?
Yeah, of course.
I used to work for hotels.com. So,
oh, yeah, then you should absolutely know that. Listen, if you're planning a holiday, listen to Danae, not me. My island is tiny and I know nothing. That reminds me, obviously last week we had our Lord of the Rings crossover episode. And somebody in our Discord thought it was quite funny that I was trying to explain the US Constitution at some point to two Americans. Just basically minutes after I've said the most English thing you can do is explain someone else's culture to them as a joke. And then I immediately go on to explain your culture to you without realizing it. It was beautiful.
It's
beautiful. I don't even know that I'm apologizing for it.
My favorite part, though, is that our Constitution is encased, you said encased in law, I believe was your exact words.
Essentially, yes. Yeah.
Which is accurate. But it is also encased in like concrete and 5 foot thick glass, protecting it from spit, light.
Yep. I know where you're going with this. Yep.
How about your Magna Carta? Why don't you tell people about what's encasing that?
So encasing that is a fabric tent. Guarded. Wait.
It's a velvet fabric.
It's a velvet. It's very nice. It is behind one sheet of glass. And then around that sheet of glass is a nice velvety fabric tent. Guarded by a man with a sash.
And a cane because he's so elderly.
But he has a badge as well. And he is quite elderly. But he is... I'm not messing with this man. He's seen things. But yes, he guards one of the copies, one of the better copies of the Magna Carta.
Because we went into this place and we're walking around this room and going like, well, what's with the tent in the middle? It's barely advertised.
Yeah, it's not at all. One of the most important and oldest documents in the world.
The people that are in the room wearing the sash are also the ones that are pointing to the various marble carvings to explain what they are. And they're like pointing over to the little... the brochure type things you can go grab in the corner that give you a tour. You know, they're those kinds of people. Yeah. They're museum people.
Yeah.
And so out of complete curiosity, we just go over and Jen was like, I think this is an important thing. Like there's, look at, there's like information on the side of this tent that says that this is like a document of some kind.
Because you're paying entry to get into this room in Salisbury Cathedral.
Yeah.
You're not paying to see the Magna Carta.
Had no
idea.
So
it wasn't
there.
Super clear. It was like just £12 to get into here. And we're like, okay. And then as you go in, you're like, wait, is that the Magna Carta?
I didn't even know what a Magna... I called it the Magnum Carta at first.
You did. You called it the Magnum. You did.
I'm thinking condoms the entire time. It's just...
The Magnum Carta. Yeah, I should have let you run with that and asked the dude about it. Can I see the Magnum Carta? And he just beats you.
Is this just a big old condom? What's in here?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Iris was talking to me today. She said, servant, would you get me a water?
Oh, no. I did that, didn't I?
I said, we don't have servants. We don't own people. Okay? And she's like, okay, mother, will you get me a water? And I said, I'm also... not your servant. Like, you can go get yourself some water.
You said it cute. That doesn't mean I'm going to get it for you. Now, to clarify, we don't own servants.
Thank you, Ian.
Servants were employed.
I'm so glad Iris is not part of this conversation.
Yeah, Mom. I told you.
I've changed my shirt three times today. My third.
Got it, yeah.
I keep drinking coffee and then just spilling it on myself.
That's amazing. I was going to guess what it was. I think coffee would have been my like kind of third guess.
What would have been your number one and two?
Sweat. Because that's...
It is hot
what's
here.
On, that's, yeah, it's very, very hot. And also I sweat a lot, so I change t-shirts like 5 times a day in America. Then bananas for some reason.
I think
it's because of, yeah, banana pancakes. I know you make those a lot. So I can imagine you like spilling banana on yourself.
Okay.
And then number three was pancakes.
Just pancakes on my body. Yeah. Just yeah, pancakes. Flipping them erratically. Yeah.
You've just got one like balanced on your chest that you didn't realize was there. And mm-hmm. Oh, shit. I've done it again.
Yeah, no.
That's where
no.
that went.
Oh, you know how I was telling you that like Iris has picked up some lingo from you?
Yeah.
And it's like not bad. So no, don't worry.
Oh, okay,
I said
good.
Bellend in front of her today. Like for me, that's just a nonsense word.
No, it's so bad.
But like for you, like Danae, don't say that.
No. Don't but, like, say that.
I called the dog a bellend. I was like, you're a bellend. And I don't know. I still don't know. Like, you're cracking up, but it's cracking me up. But I still, it's to me, it sounds like I'm saying foo foo boo boo boo. Like, it's just
it's perfect.
Thing.
Like, those dogs are absolute bellends. They really are. They are proper bellends when they want to be.
So Iris is going to start saying that now is what I'm concerned
oh,
about.
No. You said it in front of my parents and I was like, don't say bellend.
Well, like, listen, I don't know what's like. Okay, so where are the lines? There's pants, there's bellend, there's cunt. Like, there's all these things you guys say. It's
yeah,
just like a casual sort of like, oh, it's cool over here. We can say that.
Pants is definitely off the table. You can't say that one. I can't wait to hear Iris call the dogs bellends.
I mean, she's going to pass it on to people at school and I'm going to hear about it. You are so entertained.
She keeps calling her teachers bellends.
No. Oh.
Do it.
It's so strange because like I've been so careful. I've definitely cursed in front of her multiple times. Accidentally. I try to be so careful because I don't want her to have to play the mental gymnastics game of what she can and cannot say in front of teachers.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
I'll give her that complication later, I'm sure. But this one was one that was way easier for me to say because it doesn't mean anything to me. So yeah. Now, yeah, I gotta stop that. Then I cannot, no. I can't think that way. I'm gonna have to apologize for Reese's today because he doesn't have his doggy bed in here right now, and so he's just gonna be wandering around.
He's lost. Is he being a bit of a bellend?
Watch your language, my God. We're gonna jump right in and get started, I think, unless you have a story to share or anything that you wanted to kind of to jump into.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we could be here all day with stories. There's one that I had. Have you seen any of the Olympics?
Some of the Olympics, yes.
Did you see the pole vaulter that missed out on scoring point because of his penis?
Is this what you want to focus your time on, Ian?
Yes! We have so many stories about traveling, but this guy is amazing. This guy did a beautiful jump and his penis perfectly is parallel with the bar and just knocks the bar off.
I thought, to be fair, I thought mm-hmm. you were going to talk about mm-hmm. the guy who shot with his eyes wide open with no extra gear who's become a meme.
Oh, the Turkish guy.
I thought
guy.
You were
going to
talk about
yeah.
the pole vaulter who broke the record and when he landed, he did the same stance as the guy who's become the shooter
yes.
meme.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I thought
yeah,
you
yeah,
were
yeah.
going to go there.
Yeah, no. That, but everyone's covering that stuff, to be fair. Everyone is covering the penis vaulter as well. It's an amazing
I have not heard of it.
It's impressive.
So clearly I'm
you should Google
my
the
cool,
image right now.
My cool places mm-hmm. to get my news don't include penis vaulters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, Ian.
I don't think his day included it either.
Oh my God.
That's amazing. But yeah, well done to everyone at the Olympics who's won stuff and done things. Captain's pod, stardate 1562. Oh no, of course I didn't. I didn't update the. No.
You need to do that.
I didn't
Can
update
you please do
anything.
That?
I'm going to do that right now. Oh, that's the worst. Ian, you suck.